Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable Chief Justice David Gilbertson presiding, is now in session.
Please be seated. Good morning. The case for oral argument this morning is Argus Leader Media Appellant versus Lori Hogstead and others in the City of Sioux Falls, Appalachians. For the appellants this morning, we have Mr. John Arneson, an attorney from Sioux Falls. And for the appellees, we have Mr. James Moore, an attorney also from Sioux Falls. Justice Wilbur has disqualified herself in this case, and the court is delighted to welcome back an old friend, Justice John Konenkamp, who sat with this court for many years. With that, Mr. Arneson, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Chief Justice, may it please the court. I am the aforementioned John Arneson, representing the Argus Leader Media in this case. From this point on, I will just refer to them as Argus. Mr. James Moore, my worthy opponent, is representing the City of Sioux Falls, and I will refer to his client from here on as just the city to make it easier. As I had pointed out earlier, the two city officials were named in the lawsuit simply in their official capacities and because of their record-keeping obligations under the law. But it's really Argus versus the city.
As I understand it, as a housekeeping matter, there are no factual disputes in this case whatsoever, correct?
No, there is not.
Just a pure legal question.
Yes.
Okay.
The facts are just to reiterate, and James and I were speaking beforehand, and we both recognize that sometimes lawyers can talk themselves into defeat, so I'll try to be brief, but the city was involved in the construction of the Sanford Premier Center. At some point toward the end of the construction, there was a dispute or controversy regarding the quality of the siding on one end of it. And in resolving that difference or that dispute, the city entered into an agreement with the contractors who had been engaged in the project. And in the agreement, there was a provision that kept the entire agreement a secret, with one exception, and that exception was they were allowed to publish the amount of the, I'm not sure if the city got money back or if they got a refund or a reduction on the cost of the construction. But other than the actual amount, the rest of the agreement by a provision within the agreement was kept secret. So essentially what we're talking about is the city made an agreement to keep the contract or stipulation or agreement as a whole a secret. Now, the Argus asked to see a copy of that agreement, thinking that it should be a public record since it was an official document of the city. The city refused. We then went to court, and this is how we appeared here. The city's position, and one adopted by the trial court, was that SDCL 1-27, 1.5, parentheses 20, again, I won't go through that every time, but we'll just call it exemption 20, allows them to, by contractual arrangement, privatize or keep in confidence or close any document. That's the way they interpret exemption 20. It is my client's position, however, and one that was rejected by the trial court, that to interpret exemption 20, one has to bear in mind three basic things. One, the whole of the chapter, 1-27, and I think this court is aware that in 2009, the South Dakota legislature, in a bipartisan effort, completely did a comprehensive overhaul of the open record statutes in South Dakota. 1-27 is essentially a brand new creation as of 2009. In the course of doing that, the whole purpose was to create more transparency in government. Now, the general purpose was to create the transparency or expand transparency, because up until that point, records were closed in this state unless there was a very specific state statute that said the record had to be kept. And I think we're all aware that a lot of executive branch records in particular didn't exist in 1930 or 1940 or 1920 when statutes were written. So we're trying to catch up with the times. At the same time, we needed to have some respect for the areas of privacy. So 1-27.1.5 was a list of 27 odd exceptions, in which there was a particular reason that our legislature felt these records would be exempt from the presumption of openness. Provision 20 is one of those. Now, my client firmly believes, and I agree, that the presumption of openness prevails. That's to be liberally construed because that is the purpose of the law. Exceptions to the general purpose, as we know, are narrowly construed. So we believe provision 20, exemption 20, needs to be narrowly construed, and that generally it needs to fit with the whole into the mold of the general purpose of the statute. So that's the first level. We have the whole chapter 1-27, which creates this brand new presumption of openness in South Dakota government with respect to its records. The second issue that I have, and I frankly find that the way the city interprets provision 20 to allow an unknown, undescribed entity, persons, parties, whatever, to simply say, let's enter into a contract and keep something secret, that's the way they're interpreting that. That would give any governmental entity the right to make any agreement under any circumstances for any reason to hold any document a secret. That is the way they are interpreting provision 20.
But Mr. Anderson, I read in your brief you said that's a possibility, but that's not the actuality in this case.
It is not the actuality in this case, but both the trial court and the city seem to suggest that my client has to establish some malevolence in the first instance, or the more than the possibility that things can be abused. And I don't believe that it is we don't have the obligation to show mis or malfeasance in advance.
I didn't read anybody suggesting that. I didn't read anything in the brief suggesting.
The trial court's opinion.
No, I'm talking about the briefs here to us. I didn't see the city arguing you had to show evidence or something to get.
Could you give me 1 second to find? I think the city was implying that we were all good because we hadn't expressed any concern that there was something wrong here. And
yeah, there might be an implication.
It's not a clear-cut rule, there is an implication that it's incumbent upon us to come up with something that we believe is wrong. And in fact, all we're saying is, under the open records law, the whole concept of that is to keep the public informed. We are the citizens. The government is representing us. We get to know what's going on. That's number one. The second aspect is accountability. And yes, in the course of accountability, the accountability of governmental officers or employees, there is an issue of we want to avoid corruption. We want to avoid malfeasance. But we don't have to prove that there is any to want to protect ourselves against it.
Well, if we buy your argument, say we do, that this is a public document open to inspection, what is left of that provision that says contracts are not open to the public? Does it become a nullity? Or where do we draw the line? You're saying in one event, if we buy the city's argument, everything can be contracted into confidentiality. They'll come back and say, well, if we buy the Arneson argument, nothing is confidential. What can be contracted into confidentiality and what cannot?
The other 26 exceptions create areas in which the legislature felt there was a need for some privacy.
Then why did they create this provision and use the word contract?
Frankly, nobody's taking credit for it. Nobody's taking the blame for it. I don't know where it came from. Nobody seems to know where it came from. I think, simply put, somebody was saying, well, we need to take into account this litigation issue. When people go into court, typically our filings are public record, and we need to protect certain circumstances in which people are putting their private lives into a public record. That would be my guess, and for that reason, I think we have bracketed the word contract in Provision 20 is bracketed by judicial order on one end and stipulation of parties in proceedings and litigation on the other, and in the middle they put the word contract. It's hard for me to believe that that word contract isn't somehow connected to the other two concepts. And that would be my third issue. I think we have to blend this case in with a general presumption of openness under the chapter. It has to also fit in to 127.1.5. All those exceptions, by the way, with this being the exception to the exceptions, all those other exceptions, as I pointed out in my briefs, are talking about the substance of the documents or records that are being allowed to be kept confidential. There's a reason these particular documents, like Social Security numbers, there's a reason we would keep that private. But this simply says documents that anybody can, by means of contract, keep confidential. It doesn't describe what documents. It doesn't have any limitation on the type of documents. It simply says if you want to keep a document undescribed, unspecified, a secret, just make a contract and say it's a secret, and you're okay.
All right, Mr. Arneson, I'm going to ask you a two-part question. So one is, under your interpretation, if there is litigation and you read Exemption 20 as you do, then it could be part of a contract slash stipulation and be made confidential, if I'm hearing you correctly. And if so, then Mr. Moore, in his brief for the city, stated, well, that's a useless step because all they would have, you're forcing people to go into litigation, and all they would have had to do is start the litigation, and they could have done this.
Well, at least it's a step. It's better than what this is.
Okay, well, you didn't get the first part. What are you conceding? Is that your argument, that if it was litigation, then as part of a settlement contract or stipulation, it could remain confidential?
I believe that would be the way I have to interpret this. I will point out in advance, too, as a preface to your questions, I don't like this law at all. I don't like the provision. I think it's a bad law. But I do think that's the way it needs to be interpreted. I think contract and stipulation, the comma, contract, comma, or stipulation, I think the comma has to be either ignored or accepted as a mistake. And I think we have every right to do that when the general purpose of our law takes precedence over, and I don't honestly think that we can, any of us, sit here and think that the legislature would go to all this trouble to carve out an open records law that creates this presumption, and then suddenly, in the middle of a provision and bookended by judicial order and stipulation of parties to litigation, throw in the word contract and give back everything to secrecy that they had taken away. In effect, they would have undone everything they had done by the simple placement of that word. And I believe that I pointed out a couple of provisions in Chapter 2, of SDCL Chapter 2, one that essentially said punctuation should not control when the dominant purpose, and I'm not I'm paraphrasing here, when the dominant purpose is would be defeated. I'm suggesting to you that the dominant purpose of the whole chapter of the exceptions and of provision 20 per se would be defeated if we were to give this unspecified, I'm not even sure who has this contractual right under the city or the trial court's theory, but it's unlimited right now. It's unrestricted. There's nothing, to my knowledge, that would prevent Mr. Moore from making a contract as a private attorney with Mr. Fifley, who is the city attorney in Sioux Falls, to keep Mr. Moore's contract to represent the city in this case a secret. Well, we have a statute that says that's, you know, an official public record, but they could do that.
Well, but again, you've said in your brief that's a possibility, but that's not what happened in this case. Why shouldn't you, if this is bad, if the legislature stuck the word contract in the middle of this, as you say, the fact is they used the word contract and they put it in a comma. Now, why shouldn't you be upstairs right now asking them to take the comma out of the sentence?
We are.
Okay.
But I can't be two places at once. And I'm not, and I'm not a lobbyist. But, yes, we are. But to answer the implied question, Justice Zinter, we do have to figure out why would they say contract, comma, or stipulation. My theory is that nobody really sat down and looked at this. This thing sailed through hearings, the floor, the vote in both houses unanimously. Nobody mentioned this. It never got a word. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say if you can drag in one legislator from 2009 that would come in and say, Arneson, you're full of it. This is exactly what we wanted to do. I'll walk away and then go back upstairs and do it that way. I think what happened here is they got a comma, got some bad grammar. We all know what bad grammar is in legislation. We've been there before. I think each one of the justices and I and Mr. Moore have all struggled, for example, with, this is just an example, and I was going to use it, and then I realized you guys, you changed it. Great. This is SDCL 15-6-5 parentheses D, and it has to do with the filing of papers with the court and the requirement, and it always used to read, the original of all papers, comma, excluding briefs or memorandums of law thereof, comma. I read that probably 200 times in the course of my career, and I never really understood if I was never to file briefs and memorandum of law. Now you have clarified it, thank God. But there are mistakes in the law. There are bad punctuation in the law. As I point out in my brief, look at the First and Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. Not one of us would punctuate those as they are punctuated. I think contract and stipulation is a redundancy. And I know we're not supposed to be using surplusage and all of that, but essentially if we take the city's position that those are two separate concepts and contract is isolated, a standalone term, why do we even have the stipulation of the parties after that? Because contract subsumes everything that follows. Contract takes it all in. I think just as the word closed or confidential is used at the beginning of that provision as, okay, we're going to cover our bases here. We're going to use two synonyms. I think contract and stipulation are essentially being used to mean the same thing. And I do think that there's nothing... there's no better way, in my estimation, to keep... I keep going back to the words harmonious, workable, rational, logical, consistent. That's the only way that can remain consistent with the presumption of open records, with a legislature that doesn't want to sabotage its own work, and then with a list of exemptions, all of which, with this exception, identify the types of documents that have some private element. This simply says documents. It doesn't have any private element attached to it whatsoever unless you put it into the judicial context. And somebody's saying, oh, we got to worry about these judicial records. And if that is the case, then contract applies to the judiciary and not just out in the open. I grant you, Justice Zinter, I don't think it's a great law, and I do think that it's a little bit of a fine distinction between, okay, we didn't actually file these documents, but what's the difference? I grant you it's not a huge difference, but at least it's a difference. It's a better way to go than the way the trial court is leading us now. And with my last 18 seconds...
Do you agree that if this modifier at the end of this phrase, stipulation parties, if that applies, it's got to apply to everything in the series or just the last?
Again, poorly written. I'm not going to say that it applies to judicial order. It doesn't work. I get it. I think it's a poorly written statute. End of story, as was 15-6, whatever, poorly written. And I know the correction is up there, but in terms of the interpretation, that can happen here, and I think our interpretation is the more valid one. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ernst. Mr. Moore, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. I think that the one of the big differences between the argument Mr. Arneson is presenting and the one that I'm presenting is where do we start? And Mr. Arneson candidly conceded he just doesn't like this statute. He thinks it's bad grammar and bad punctuation. It's neither of those things. It's absolutely clear. And the starting point in the case is not do we like the statute, what do we think of it? It's is the text clear? Justice Zinner, the question you just asked is exactly the appropriate one. The issue in the case is what do we do with the prepositional phrase of the parties to a proceeding, and to what does that modify? It functions as an adjective in the statute, and the question is whether it applies to court order, contract, or stipulation. Does it apply to just stipulation? Does it apply to stipulation and contract, or does it apply to all three? It can't apply to all three because it makes no sense.
Well, we have another canon of construction that says we will not construe a statute in a nonsensical manner. And Mr. Arneson is saying if we buy your argument, it literally can swallow up the entire act and you can contract away between two parties any access to anything.
So
where do we draw the line if your interpretation is correct? The same question I asked him.
Well, the response to that is that there are, in fact, limits on the ability of parties to contract away absolutely anything and make it confidential. The most significant limitation on that is politics. It's just political reality. We're talking about a governmental entity. We're talking about transparency. We're talking about open government. We're talking about a legislature that meets every year. We're talking about people who are in the building right now who are politicians who are concerned about transparency. If this is a problem, if this is being abused by public entities, by cities and municipalities, then we would know about it and there would be a request for the legislature to fix it. That is a reality. The second question is, it's not a unilateral determination by the city or the municipality that we're going to declare this confidential. What we had here was a multi-party settlement agreement, and at the end of the day, all of the parties agreed that it could be closed. That's not a unilateral action on part of the city. That's parties agreeing to a contract. A contract is a judicially enforceable document. It requires offer and acceptance. It requires consideration. It requires mutuality. It's judicially enforceable, and that's why it fits. That's why it fits in that series, court order, contract, stipulation of the parties to a proceeding. It's a judicially enforceable document.
Now,
it makes sense.
I take it that the original bid was a public record when they
yes,
hired this.
Yes, subject. Your Honor, it was.
So can you, halfway through this business arrangement, when things go bad, all of a sudden summarily close it by contract at that point when the previous portion of the business arrangement's been open?
Well, it's still open. The only thing that's closed in this case is which party paid which amount who contributed what to the total amount of $1 million. We know who the parties to the agreement were. We know what the total amount of the agreement was. And it's not hard to imagine in a construction dispute that what happened in terms of settlement is that everybody got together. There was lots of bickering about who should pay what. At the end of the day, they got to a common amount. Somebody probably agreed to pay more than they thought they should pay, and they said, I don't want this to be public because people are going to think that we're the responsible party when, in fact, we're just settling this case, making this contribution to get it done because that's in the best interest of everybody involved. Everybody agreed to that, and it was made confidential. Why is that irrational for the legislature to think that contracts, as used in the statute, serves to protect that important interest for an agreement that is reached in anticipation of litigation? And one of the undisputed facts in this case is that a lawsuit was drafted. All that the city had to do at the end of the day for this case not to exist is say, wait a minute, you need to sign the admission of service in this case, and then it's undisputed, it's confidential. How is that irrational that the legislature said we're going to allow a municipality in anticipation of litigation in a circumstance where it makes sense for a case to be settled and where contracting parties say the only way this case is going to be settled is if its terms are confidential to allow that to happen? That's all we have here.
Mr. Moore, in reading contract in this series, in using Exemption 20 or Exception 20, Are you reading it that the contract is a standalone term, or are you reading it with the rest of the sentence on of the parties to a civil or criminal action or proceeding?
It's a standalone term.
So and you could you're talking about litigation. Under your interpretation, any contract could be made.
That's true, Your Honor.
Could be made confidential.
I don't dispute that. That's true.
All right. And the second part of the question, you started by saying it's very simple reading this. Are you saying that this provision is not ambiguous or is ambiguous? That's a starting point that we've got to look at.
I'm saying it's not ambiguous. It is absolutely crystal clear. And the fundamental rules of punctuation and grammar that support that are the doctrine of the last antecedent, which in this context we're talking about is a judicial canon of construction, a rule of interpretation. It's also a rule of English grammar. You have to have some rule. Language doesn't have some inherent meaning for you and you and you and you. There are common rules and understandings about how language is used and has to be interpreted. And one of those rules is that when you have a prepositional phrase like this, you have to figure out what it modifies. It normally modifies what it is closest to and nothing more. And that's especially true when you have items in a series separated by commas.
All right, but we don't even get to that if it's clear on its face. And you just said that it was clear on its face, so we don't get to rules of interpretation.
Well, I'm not using those as judicial rules of interpretation. I'm using those as the rules that I, as a layperson, bring to reading the language of the statute. That's simply just English and punctuation. It's grammar and punctuation. And I agree with you. Based on that, it's clear. And you don't ever get to invoking rules of judicial construction, statutory interpretation based on ambiguity. There is no ambiguity here.
So in other words, the contract, the provision is unambiguous. And so a public entity could include in every contract a provision that would make the terms of the contract confidential. Would that not defeat the purpose of the rule in the chapter, as argued by Mr. Arneson?
Well,
what is your response on that point?
That one, that there's absolutely no evidence in the record that that is happening anywhere. Two, it's clear in the record that that's not what happened in this case. Three, as I indicated, that's not a decision that a city or a municipality can unilaterally make. A contract is at least a bilateral agreement that requires the agreement of all parties to the document. And lastly, there is very significant political pressure that comes to bear here. The cities are not immune to the reality that there is public interest in open and transparent proceedings. And again, I think if this is a problem, it's a legislative problem. It's not a judicial problem. And the court, to obviate the concern that you've raised, would have to ignore the plain language of the statute, nullify the term contract, because it becomes meaningless. If you apply of the parties to a proceeding a contract, then it's no different than stipulation. It takes away the ability of the parties to settle a dispute in anticipation of litigation. And I think it upsets settled principles of statutory interpretation and how we as lawyers are told by the courts to approach a legal text. And simply applying those rules and the understanding that you start with the text in this case, that's the beginning and the end of the case.
What about the provision in South Dakota statutes? And I guess I could find it specifically, but it's, it says that if punctuation makes it ambiguous or makes problems, you can ignore the punctuation.
But as I understand the statute, it says you can ignore the punctuation if it does not conform to the purpose of the statute. I don't know how you can conclude that use of a serial comma in this instance, which is again standard English, that somehow does not conform to the purpose of the statute, which in this particular context is to create an exception to the general rule of open disclosure. I just don't know what the basis for the argument is that somehow that doesn't conform to the purpose, other than what Justice Kern suggested, which is if contract really means contract, then you can contract away anything. The reality is that is not occurring and it won't occur. And so it's not absurd for the legislature to have put that provision in the statute to allow the parties to do exactly what was done in this case, which at the end of the day is not unreasonable. Mr. Arneson has never advanced an argument on behalf of the Argus Leader about what exactly is the public interest in knowing which subcontractor contributed what amount to the total settlement of $1 million. At the end of the day, what the public knows is there was a dispute between contractors about what happened with the siding on the event center, that dispute was settled, that all of the part, we know exactly who was involved and we know the total amount that was paid. We know that money was received by the city. We know what's being done with the money. All of that serves the public interest. And for the court to say that there's something seriously amiss here, I think goes way beyond the facts of this case.
But under your argument, you could have contracted to seal all of it. The amount of the settlement, who the parties were, everything, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And the reality is that didn't happen because of the political...
Right, but there's always a next time.
But it's the political pressure that I'm talking about, Your Honor. That's why it didn't happen.
Okay.
Because the city knows that that's a concern and that that's a problem. And so the reasonable resolution that's reached, that the legislature allowed by drafting the statute as it did, is to say that we understand that this may be a circumstance where it makes sense for you to be able to settle this case where a party insists on confidentiality. And the city says, that's okay, but we're going to disclose the amount of this. That's what happened.
It doesn't come up in the argument, but... would one of those other three statutes, the second argument that the would one of those cover a finance issue like that, the amount of the settlement?
I don't think so, Your Honor. In general, my argument on that is that it's very hard to take a statute outside the 127 and say that it somehow is more specific than the provisions of 127 and the very specific exception that's included here. And that, ultimately, we haven't talked about the decision that Judge Erickson reached in the Huron School District case, but ultimately that's my concern there. He took a general statute and he said any papers, records, related to the business of the school district are open according to this statute, and therefore that's more specific and this particular exception doesn't apply. If that's true, think about all the exceptions in 127 that don't apply. Under that interpretation, personal information of students, student medical records, personnel information other than salaries, employment applications for district positions, all of those things that are specifically accepted under 127 would no longer be exempt because of this more general statute over here. I just think that's a faulty understanding and a misapplication of the idea that a more specific statute is going to control over the general. I think once you go outside 127, you're dealing with a more general statute. 127 is the section that specifically relates to open records and the exception here. If there are no more questions, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Mr. Arneson, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal, sir.
Well, James, I guess if we can talk our way into defeat, you win.
I'm taking the whole time. I guess I'll try to work backwards in this because it's freshest in my mind, but I think we have given, or I have given short shrift to the second argument that I made about the more specific taking precedence by virtue of SDCL 1-27-33. And I do think what Mr. Moore is missing in that argument is that just because these other statutes exist outside the framework of the general open records law, Chapter 1-27, they are more specific because, for example, the statutes upon which I relied dealt with the city specifically. 1-27 deals with government generally. So I would simply, I'm not going to waste a lot of time on this because I think the way more important argument is our first argument. But I do think that there are these other statutes that pertain more specifically to entities, for example, the city statutes, do have more specificity than the general open records law or the exceptions. I also find it interesting that Mr. Moore acknowledges at some point, and I think that the audio would confirm this, that the city is aware of the public interest and that this is, I mean, he continues to say that these bad things haven't happened. And get back to your original question, Justice Zinter, I did find that section, and I grant you that neither the trial court nor the city actually said a precondition to our argument is that we have to find wrongdoing. But the insistence that there is no wrongdoing, that nothing untoward has happened here, isn't relevant. I think one of the questions, follow-up questions, is relevant, and that is, well, there is a next time. And we are concerned with potential, not actuality. And if the law were allowed to proceed the way the city and the trial court would have it, we would never know if there is misfeasance, malfeasance, corruption, embezzlement, or whatever. It is not our, it's not incumbent upon the public to come to you first with evidence that something has gone wrong. That's really not what the whole purpose of open government is about, or open or public access. First place we have a public interest, as the city acknowledges. I don't know why our public interest stops at the amount of the settlement agreement. Maybe I have an interest in finding out if contractor A paid more than contractor B, or if contractor C, whose brother-in-law is related to somebody on the city commission, got a good deal. I mean, those kinds of things are something that probably aren't happening, but it would sure be nice to know that it's not happening. So the fact that there is a public interest, I think, speaks for itself, and I think detracts from the city's argument that, well, it's not happening, so, you know, we'll just assume that the public isn't interested because it isn't happening. And if it is happening, well, politics will take care of it. That's not a satisfactory answer to this. I think also the fact that these contracts, or any contract, remember, we're talking documents. The fact that contract is used in that in provision 20. That's a means, that's the method by which something is going to be kept confidential. It applies to the right to contract. According to the city, they get to enter into a contract to keep any document a secret. It just so happens in our case, we're dealing with a contract that keeps a contract a secret. But documents could be anything. As I pointed out in one of my briefs, it could be, it could be my speeding record. It could be anything. So for us to try to limit this argument to situations in which we're only talking about contracts would be a little, and I think the trial court got a little confused with that too. I think the trial court kept focusing on the word contract when in fact that's the method. Documents is what we're talking about, and documents is undescribed, undefined, unspecified. Every other one of the exceptions, the documents pertain to something in particular. This, who knows, could be anything.
Wait a minute. The statute says there's three kinds of documents that are protected. Statute says there's three kinds. Court orders, contracts, and stipulations.
No, it says documents may be declared closed by contract.
Right.
Contract is the method. Document could be anything.
Yep.
So judicial order, contract, and stipulation are the methods, not the documents themselves. The rest of those exceptions describe and have some privacy interest in the document. These documents don't have to be, it's not Social Security numbers necessarily, is what I'm saying. The other thing about having two contracting parties, I don't really care. If I'm contracting with the city of Sioux Falls, I'm doing business with the city of Sioux Falls, I think I have had some recent experience with federal FOIA. And in FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, in those cases, there's a great body of case law that pretty much talks about the privacy of those doing business with government. And in a lot of instances, the courts say, you choose voluntarily to do business with government, you give up some of the normal aspects of privacy. And I think, frankly, if you want to engage with the city and bid on contracts and do the city construction work, I'm not sure that's the same thing as a guy putting an addition on my house in
what
terms
about
of your expectation.
Mr. Moore's comment that all they would have had to do here is to convert this from a contract settlement into a lawsuit by signing an admission of service. If that happened, were you out of luck? What do you do then?
If that had happened, I probably wouldn't be here. I think that's what Judge Erickson decided. He decided, again, I would take issue with the city on that. He decided this case, I believe, on both grounds that we're arguing in here. And in the first of them, I think if the word contract stands alone, then there's no reason for stipulation of the parties to a lawsuit. But I believe contract and stipulation were intended to be part of litigation. And again, I don't like that statute. I don't think the city or government representatives ought to be engaged in secret deals, even if they are in litigation. So that's when I would run upstairs and say, is this really what we ought to be doing? I would use, representative here. I'm not going to be the one running up there doing this, but I would then take issue with the statute by allowing government to decide, who makes that decision, who decides. I am the city. I am a party. This is the citizens we're talking about, and I don't think that we ought to be making, private contracts to settle lawsuits, even if they're filed. But that's, I would have to agree that had it been filed under the Judge Erickson assessment, I would have to say that I think is what the statute was designed to do. Justice Zinter, I did want to point out that I did find the section in which the the city noted in its brief, is that the circuit, quoting, as the circuit court noted, there is no allegation of malevolent secrecy on the part of the city in this case. And the city disclosed arguably the most important term, that is the global settlement amount of $1 million. And that we have not explained, he goes on to say that the Argus has not explained what public interest would be served. I don't have a duty to start explaining to this court what the public interest is. I think the public interest is a constant. It's a given. We don't have an obligation to show that our government has been lying or cheating to us. We simply have an obligation to try to keep them accountable, and that's why we're here, is to make sure the government is as transparent as possible. And if it is, things will work. If it isn't, things go bad. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Court will be in recess.